Right now, the practice of prescribing opioids for those with chronic pain has come under fire as a factor in the nation's opioid epidemic, with many states and counties taking legal action against pharmaceutical companies for their role. At the same time, the idea of pain acceptance is gaining traction within the medical community. The approach focuses on the psychological and emotional aspects of pain and encourages living as well as one can with chronic pain. Some research is showing that the idea has real benefits, but it's also generated a backlash from those who fear it might encourage doctors to cut off painkillers from those who really need them. Kevin Valls is a clinical psychologist and an associate professor at the University of New Mexico. He specializes in pain management as well as acceptance and commitment therapy. Kevin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me.
The rise in opioid prescriptions in the last 20 years or so is something that's gotten a lot of attention lately, especially in regards to whether it's a cause of the opioid epidemic or at least a contributing factor. Now, this idea of pain acceptance is gaining traction as part of a possible solution. What do we mean by pain acceptance?
That's a great question. So the big concern with opioids these days is just that there have been increases in opioid-related problems and opioid-related deaths, which seem to coincide with the increases in opioid prescriptions over the past decade and a half or so. What has been an outcome of some of these data is a refocusing on behavioral treatments for chronic pain. In other words, treatments that aim to help pain sufferers get back to the business of living a good life or functioning with the pain that they have. So this idea of pain acceptance doesn't mean liking it or somehow enjoying pain, but is about promoting some willingness to experience pain in the pursuit of meaningful activity.
And you are a psychologist, and what we're talking about is there's obviously a physical component to the conditions that can lead to chronic pain for people living with them, but there are also psychological and emotional aspects of these situations. Can you tell us specifically what kind of issues people might be dealing with in those realms?
So that's a great point. The chronic pain, when it's problematic, almost always involves some kind of physical sensation of pain, and may or may not be associated with a history of injury. But in those who are experiencing pain, that has really led to significant levels of disability or disruption of life. In other words, individuals who've given up working, maybe, or given up family roles or other kinds of social roles. It's very common for those folks to experience significant emotional distress, levels of clinically significant depression, or even something that in the field is called pain-related anxiety or fear, where individuals are hypervigilant about the experience of pain and spend a lot of their time trying to avoid any sensations of pain. All of those things together, depression, pain-related fear, and anxiety, can really exacerbate the negative impact that chronic pain can have on functioning of the lives of individuals with that pain.
So what has research shown about the relationship between how people feel about their pain, maybe how they kind of process the experience of being in pain, and how much medication they feel that they need or that they use?
Also a really good question. What the evidence to date suggests is that individuals who are using the highest doses of opioids or who are using them in a problematic manner, these are the individuals who also tend to experience highest levels of pain-related distress and disability. So there seems to be a relation between opioid dose and overall levels of kind of disruption of living. Does that answer your question?
It does. I think another aspect of that is, do we know what kind of correlation there is between how much medication, how many pain relievers people are taking when they have chronic pain, and the quality of life scale? So, you know, is there kind of a direct correlation between having access to more medication, having a higher quality of life, or is it maybe much more incremental on how much better they think their lives are?
That is a complicated question to answer, and there are a lot of nuances in here. One thing that we know is that if individuals are taking opioids for kind of emotional modulation or for sedation purposes, in other words, if individuals are taking opioids to kind of feel better emotionally, that's associated with more distress and more disability. So opioids taken kind of for emotional modulation is generally associated with more problems. Opioids being taken for pain relief or for pain reduction primarily don't tend to be as associated with other kinds of functional or emotional problems. All of that being said, the big issue here from the perspective of the scientific literature is not this issue of are opioids good or bad, but really looking at individuals whose problems are being exacerbated by opioids. And the evidence to date suggests that's a clinically significant minority of individuals with chronic pain who are taking opioids. We reviewed the literature a couple of years ago, and that literature suggests it's somewhere between 10 and 12% perhaps of individuals who are taking opioids for the treatment of chronic pain who are using them in a manner that's hazardous. So by no means does the evidence suggest it's everyone who's taking opioids, or the evidence doesn't suggest opioids are kind of bad by their very nature or harmful by their very nature. But there is this small proportion of individuals who seem to be using opioids in a way that poses some real significant health risks.
But it does seem, Kevin, that the concern among some people who have chronic pain and who are dependent on opioids, not in an addiction type of way, but in a pain management kind of way, sure, is that that small percentage of people who have chronic pain are on opioids and are misusing it are basically making doctors shy of prescribing them and taking on that potential liability. And so people who, the rest of those 90% who would be using it in a responsible and appropriate way, are at risk of losing that way of controlling their pain.
I share those concerns, and I think it's a valid concern for individuals to have. So there's a few points here to be made. One is, I think all of us, healthcare providers, media, patients, need to be arguing for a sensible or a rational approach to opioid prescribing and to opioid monitoring. A number of my patients can feel like they're engaging in some kind of criminal activity as they go to get their opioids refilled. And so I think that discussion just needs to continue, and we need to continue to educate our legislators, that it does seem to be a clinically significant minority that we need to pay attention to. The second part here is the behavioral treatments for chronic pain, or the psychological treatments for chronic pain, have been around for decades. There was a great book written in 1976, which is kind of the oldest treatment manual I can think of. So these interventions have been around for 40 years for chronic pain, and they have very good evidence for improving quality of life with pain and for decreasing distress and disability. So I don't see this as a opioids versus behavioral treatments issue or behavioral treatments versus opioids, but that even individuals who are using opioids appropriately can benefit from some behavioral treatments that are designed to improve overall quality of life.
We're talking with Kevin Vowles. He's a clinical psychologist and professor at the University of New Mexico, about why more doctors think that accepting some types of chronic pain can lead to less reliance on medication. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you live with some type of chronic pain, how do you cope with it? Are you worried that it's becoming harder to get painkillers that might be necessary? Or do you think we should be giving more thought to psychological approaches like pain acceptance as a way to limit the abundance of opioid drugs? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation in just a minute. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're talking with clinical psychologist Kevin Vowles of the University of New Mexico right now about the idea of pain acceptance as a way to cope with chronic pain and reduce reliance on painkillers. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're suffering from chronic pain, is acceptance something you've worked towards? Has it helped? Or do you think that painkillers have given you a better quality of life that you would not be able to get with other means. If you're a doctor, how do you feel about prescribing opioid medications? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And let's talk a little bit about people who have chronic pain and who might be interested in this acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT for short. Kevin, can you give us a sense of what that process entails?
In terms of the process of treatment itself, or what treatment's targeting?
Yeah, I mean, what if someone says, I'm interested in this approach, what does it mean?
That's a great, also a good question. The overall focus of acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT for short, is on helping people with chronic pain achieve a quality of life that's adequate for their needs. So we tend to focus on something we call values-based living or values-based functioning. And the point of that is that for many with chronic pain, there are really important areas of life where effective functioning has reduced. And as I said earlier, it's common for the people who I see to have given up work and to feel that there are aspects of independence that have kind of fallen victim to this experience of chronic pain. And so the point of ACT is to help people identify what these important areas are or were, and then to structure treatment in such a way that consistent and progressive improvement in engagement in these areas can occur. And this idea of acceptance that you've mentioned a few times here is really predicated on the assumption that there's got to be some increased willingness or acceptance of pain as one is beginning to pursue these valued areas or reengage with life. Said in another way, re-engaging in life for individuals who have chronic pain is likely to involve some experience of increased pain. And what we want is for people to only engage in those activities that are worth some increase in pain or that are worth the experience of pain. And if I can provide one quick example, it's
sure.
Common for me to see grandparents who want to interact with their grandchildren in a meaningful way, but that interaction has been limited by chronic pain. And so the discussion here is, what are the activities that you can begin doing with your grandchildren that are meaningful for you, that you'd be worth to experience, that you'd be worth risking some increase in pain to experience?
Let's go to the phones, and Kevin in Mount Horeb is up first. Hi, Kevin.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a working man in my early 60s, and I would venture to say that I am no stranger to pain as probably anyone my age that works a blue-collar job is. I should have had my shoulder repaired here several months ago, but it wasn't so bad that I felt I needed the surgery. And so I'm dealing with that. I live with it day to day. I can put my hands over my head, and it's totally usable, but there are days when it annoys me. And as far as your expert is concerned, I chose this. I chose not to have the surgery because I felt that the risks far outweighed the benefits. But I am not in favor of living in pain. I don't see any need for it. We are just too far advanced in the way we live to be talking about succumbing to pain and having to deal with it and living with it and befriending pain.
Thanks for that call, Kevin. And that brings up a question in my mind, Kevin, that are there other options? I mean, we're looking at this as there are people who are in very legitimate and debilitating chronic pain, and there is an issue with opioids. And sometimes for people who are in pain, and definitely for people who become addicted to them, are there other options? Is it, you know, what about something like cannabis oil or something like that? Are there other options for treating chronic pain that can kind of satisfy all the outcomes?
Your caller's point is a good one, and a common sentiment that it is not fair that in this day and age pain can persist as long as it does. Nonetheless, the evidence that's out there suggests that even if you track people with chronic pain over years, that pain tends to persist over time. The longest follow-up study I'm aware of is a 12-year follow-up study where 82% or 85%, something like that, of the individuals who had chronic pain at day one continued to have it 12 years later. And so the big issue here, I think, is that for many who have chronic pain, there will be some expectation that pain will persist in some form over the longer term, and that treatments that are available at this point in time don't appear entirely adequate if our goal is complete pain elimination. And I know that's bad news, and I am just as frustrated by that bad news as your caller sounded. But again, that seems to be what the evidence suggests.
And so, I want to say I said cannabis oil, but I actually meant cannabis, just cannabis.
Sure, no problem. And a lot of these interventions that are out there, including cannabis and its derivatives, the data doesn't suggest that they solve the problem of pain. Just like opioids don't solve the problem of pain, as in achieving complete elimination. What they can do is provide some temporary respite or relief from the experience of pain. And all that I would ask both your caller and your listeners to also attend to is that we want to make sure that quality of life is adequate over the longer term for individuals, both with the experience, without the experience of pain, but also sometimes with it. And your caller made a good point, which is he's foregoing this shoulder surgery because at this point the risks seem to outweigh the benefits. And if he were my patient, I would talk to him that as soon as either the impact of this pain or the risks of not having the surgery begin to outweigh the benefit. In other words, when this pain starts to have a significant negative impact on functioning, that's when it's time to think about an alternative approach.
Thanks for that call. Let's go back to the phones, and Stephanie in Madison is up next. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I'm a chronic pain patient. I have a multitude of issues, including rheumatoid arthritis and a pinched nerve in my neck. And I use opioids, and it's an interesting balance. Like what you're talking about, I also see a therapist, so it's the balance of working with my therapist and using the pain management I don't expect it to clear my pain. I just need it to keep going. And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't see is, like, I go to Walgreens to get my medication, and a lot of people just assume that I'm conning the system, even though it's something I need to live. But it's definitely the point about it being a balance between medication and behavioral therapy is definitely something that's very true for me.
Stephanie, thanks for sharing that. And I want to go right to Chris in Milwaukee, who also has personal experience to share. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment would just be that I was a student athlete. I've turned my rotator cuff twice, I've dislocated knees, sprained ankles, everything else. Now I work in a skilled trade. I'm on my feet every day, all day. Pain is just a reality. And as different things flare up, I go to the doctor and I found joy over the years in physical therapy, massage, chiropractic, and everything that area of medicine has to offer. And I think that if people were encouraged more that, you know, there is joy to be found in learning about your body and recovering with someone's assistance, that could help a lot.
And Chris, who suggested to you that physical therapy, massage, other non-medication options might help you?
It was my childhood orthopedist who knew me very well. And he was, I guess, philosophically against, but didn't like to use painkillers unless he had to, didn't like to send people into surgery unless he absolutely had to. And so his approach was always physical therapy first, massage therapy, whatever it's been, whatever was appropriate. And that has worked for me. And that and your standard over-the-counter anti-inflammatories have been working for me for well over a decade now.
Great. Thanks so much for that, Chris. And Kevin, a couple stories there about how kind of alternative or non-medication approaches have been quite helpful for people.
Yeah, both Stephanie and Chris talked to, if I heard them correctly, I couldn't hear Chris super clearly, but both of them seemed to talk about a balance between what we sometimes call the passive treatment modalities or treatment modalities that involve someone doing something to you, so analgesic consumption or massage, and the active therapies where the patient or the person receiving care and the provider work together in order to achieve some outcome. And this balance between the passive and the active treatment modalities seems to be really important in the treatment of chronic pain. Individuals who are engaging in mostly passive modalities are sometimes at risk of further exacerbations of pain and pain-related problems. As a general kind of broad sweeping rule, right, that doesn't necessarily apply to everyone, but significant use of the passive modality seems to be a risk factor for more pain-related problems.
And Kevin, what do doctors need to be hearing to help them figure out how to strike a balance between not over-prescribing potentially addictive painkillers, but also making sure that people who need medication to function still have access to that?
That is a difficult question to answer. I am but a psychologist in New Mexico. some things that I ask our prescribers to pay attention to. One is to pay attention primarily to function and how whatever treatments are being provided are helping patients function in the way that they want to. So even a higher dose of opioids that might allow someone to maintain vocational functioning or family functioning or social functioning can be defensible because the treatment appears to be helping overall with how people are interacting with the world around them. It seems to be helping overall with quality of life. I think that's probably point one. The second point is to be careful in feeling that passive modalities are the only treatments that are available for individuals with chronic pain. There is a big push in a number of healthcare systems, including the DOD and the VA and some of the bigger integrated healthcare systems, to really move behavioral health into primary care.
And we'll have to leave it there. Kevin Valls is a clinical psychologist and an associate professor at the University of New Mexico. He talked with us about the idea of pain acceptance and why it's gaining traction in some circles. Thanks so much for joining us today, Kevin.